You've heard the headlines. Get some perspective now with Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
And a good morning to you. A happy Tuesday. We jump right into the show with reaction and fallout from yesterday's Russian press conference.
The Lead. Brought to you by Burge Ford, off the U.S. 60 and Mesa Drive.
Well, Bruce, President Trump is getting what could be the worst press of his presidency after that press conference with Vladimir Putin, widely being described as disgraceful. Trump, standing alongside the Russian leader after the summit, rejected the findings of American intelligence agencies that Russia interfered in the election. Trump allies among those criticizing his remarks, with even Newt Gingrich urging him to immediately correct, quote, the most serious mistake of his presidency.
Of course he won't, because he doesn't think he did anything wrong. It's what he believes, no matter how wrong he is, anti-American, unpatriotic it is, to take the word of a Russian dictator over your own intelligence community, the Senate Intelligence Committee, and the House Intelligence Committee.
But yet, yesterday, you had the president standing there saying he didn't understand why Russia would meddle.
President Putin, he just said it's not Russia.
Oh.
I will say this. I don't see any reason why it would be.
No. Can't imagine. No imagination possible why Russia wouldn't have influence over American elections. Can't imagine.
Earlier this morning, you had Speaker Paul Ryan.
We just conducted a year-long investigation into Russia's interference in our elections. They did interfere in our elections. It's really clear. There should be no doubt about that.
And here's President Obama, who just moments ago said this.
Given the strange and uncertain times that we are in, and they are strange, and they are uncertain, with each day's news cycles bringing more head-spinning and disturbing headlines.
Joining us right now on our KTAR Newsmaker line is Lieutenant Colonel Daniel L. Davis, retired. He is a foreign policy expert with ABC News, and we really are appreciative of having you here today. Obviously, foreign policy is in the news a little bit, sir, and our relationship with Russia. I wanted to start with you as someone who spent time in the military, over 20 years in active service, the perspective that you have when it comes to kind of today's Russia versus, dare I say, yesterday's Soviet Union, kind of a compare and contrast. Russia's very different today in many ways, but I get the sense that there's some similarities as well.
There are, and man, you've asked the right question. So the first time that I was in Europe, and I spent over 6 years living in Germany, and I was able to see both during the Cold War, kind of at its, when it started falling apart, and then afterwards. And there was a very strong contrast between both those. I was with the 2nd U.S. Cavalry actually patrolling the east-west border in the late 80s and early 90s, when there was still, you know, the Cold War was fully in effect, and you had 50,000 tanks of the Warsaw Pact on the other side that could come through what they call the Fold the Gap at any time and roll to the west. And that was a legitimate concern. And you saw, you know, all the NATO countries in the west, and they were spending 3-4% GDP. You saw them with well-trained troops, with highly capable equipment, and they recognized it was a legitimate threat there. In today's world, though, many of those who were opposed to us in the Warsaw Pact are now on the NATO side, leaving Russia almost by itself, in military terms, practically are alone. And we've moved almost all the way up to the border there. So the threat now is substantially less, even though the Russia has been improving their military, over the last decade or so in some meaningful ways. But it's still not just a fraction of the power that the Warsaw Pact had. And it's not even comparison to the total military weight of NATO today. So the threat is just in just black and white terms of military capability. It's a lot less today than it was in the late 90s during the Cold War, early 90s. But the thing that's it's the same and no difference is the fact that they're, you know, the world's largest in numerical terms nuclear power. And so when you have basically nuclear parity between the United States and Russia, and because of that, you can't take them lightly. You can't dismiss them. You have to deal with them on a legitimate basis.
Lieutenant Colonel, on a follow-up on a foreign policy angle, though, are we giving them too much credence and too much credibility? Should we treat them more like Brazil with nuclear weapons? Or are we being appropriately concerned about their, dare I say, expansionist or trying to export their beliefs around the world?
Have to pay attention, because you can't let your guard down, because you don't want them to make even incremental gains at our expense. But I think the most important thing, and it's certainly the fallout from this summit yesterday, is that there has been far too much focus on style and far too little on substance. For example, there's some legitimate criticism of the president for making moral equivalency in some places, even saying, hey, we were responsible for some of these things. And there's, you know, the rumors or the jury's out on whether we were actually did some of those things. And it's very clear that Russia did have some activities within our 2016 election, and that's very clear. But underneath that, instead of kowtowing to Putin, instead of like basically deferring to him, you see when Trump sees our interest at stake, he does not hesitate to take bold and decisive act, like when he kicked out dozens of their diplomats, when he fired missiles into Syria opposed to their desires, and when he sent anti-tank missiles into the Ukraine, very much against their preferences and requests. So he does take action to defend America's interests, but he is absolutely right in trying to improve relations to at least an amicable state, because it is in our interest to not have an adversarial relation with the world's other nuclear weapons power.
We're talking to retired Lieutenant Colonel Daniel Davis right now on the KTAR Newsmaker line. And, sir, you know, we've heard a rebuke of the president's statements from both sides of the aisle, Democrats and some Republicans alike, taking him to task using a variety of words to describe what they witnessed yesterday. As a foreign policy analyst, I'm wondering, what is your take on how this is playing out across the globe? How is the rest of the world viewing yesterday's summit and display?
When you look at that, you have to compare at the same time what happened in NATO with the NATO summit and then what happened in Helsinki. And I think that what you see there is, frankly, there's a number of leaders and heads of states from across the globe, both on both sides of our friend or foe line, that probably don't like some of the things Trump is saying, and they maybe personally have a distaste for him, possibly even. But in terms of geopolitical strategic interest, I still think there is no doubt in anyone's mind, whether that's Stoltenberg or May or Merkel, who were, you know, kind of taken to task in that NATO summit publicly, they know that still their future lies with the United States, that we still are aligned in the substance and the things that really matter. And they know that Russia does not have our views, and that they certainly don't have any interest in going it alone against Russia. So I think that this will be a blip on the screen overall, because the baseline that has existed for decades continues to exist, and it's going to continue to exist when we have a new president.
We're speaking again with ABC News' foreign policy and defense analyst, retired Lieutenant Colonel Daniel L. Davis. Lieutenant Colonel, is this at the root of this? Is this about military expansionism, communism versus democracy, or is this an economic argument? Is this about things like oil and natural resources and trade? Where is it kind of, and maybe you can help also contrast to where it used to be?
Yeah, I think, again, you're really asking the right question. I think more than the economic aspects of this, I think that we're just stuck mentally in the Cold War, and that we still intellectually view Russia as the Warsaw Pact and the Soviet Union, because that's the reason why I think we still want to expand NATO even further and to get even closer to Russia's border. And I think the fear is just not justified, and doing so, frankly, works against our interests, because it causes them to be more antagonistic than they need to be. And what we need to do is break out of that old mentality and look afresh at what is the geostrategic balance right now. What are military capabilities on both sides? What is the intent? What is the governing philosophy? And then what is the threat or risk to us? And what is the opportunity? Because there's opportunities there to have as well that lowers the security threat and raises the economic opportunities.
Thank you very much for your time today again, sir. That's ABC Foreign Policy and Defense Analyst, Lieutenant Colonel Daniel L. Davis, retired. We appreciate your time. He's good. Solid. Knows his stuff, doesn't he? It's pretty cool. And again, there's so many changes, and it is difficult to apply a Soviet Union filter over today's Russia, but I tend to take the word of and agree with those who say Russia is not our friend. Russia is a competitor, a foe, and Russia is actively attempting to undermine our interests around the world and here in the United States for their own reasons. Acknowledge that. The fact that you want to argue against it might be the crazier part. The Lead brought to you by Burge Ford off the US 60 and Mesa Drive, online at burgeford.com. So did you participate in Amazon Prime Day? You know, I kind of look at it like Valentine's Day. If you're really in love with somebody, every day's Amazon Prime Day, right? Well, as you were doing so, you were helping making Amazon CEO, owner, founder Jeff Bezos. I don't even know what we're not outrageously rich anymore. We're disgustingly rich. Oh, what a goal to attain.
Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
You are currently listening to, spending time with two people whose lives have been forever changed by Amazon and Amazon Prime
yes.
And having things, dare I say, things you didn't even know you need delivered to your house basically within 24 hours.
Yeah, literally about 2 minutes ago, I got the notice from Amazon saying that my package was going to be delivered today.
Okay, I want to order a salt lamp. I don't
like
know
why. Like a Himalayan salt lamp?
There you go.
Okay,
I don't
Himalayan
know why.
Salt lamp.
And I'm looking at them on the Amazon.
Well, that's more my speed than it is yours. Well, I'm kind of intrigued.
I don't even know what they do. I'm just
you
thinking,
don't?
No idea.
Why do you want one then?
It kind of look cool.
Hey, but you know what? It is Amazon Prime Day, so you may go on and find a great deal or maybe not, because yesterday, if you tried to get on Amazon, either through their app or online, chances are you had a little bit of a difficult time. There were a lot of puppy dogs, because whenever you went on and it said, like, it couldn't load,
okay,
it'd be a picture of a puppy dog. And there's about six different puppy dogs that were making the rounds saying,
really?
Sorry.
Maybe
we're
adoptions went up. Maybe
yeah, some technical difficulties.
Prime Day officially began at 3 p.m. Eastern on Monday. And within 7 minutes, users started seeing the words, sorry, and below that, pictures of dogs.
Yes.
Amazon tweeted that some customers were having difficulty shopping and that it was working to fix the problem. It says in the first hour, U.S. customers ordered more items this year compared to the first hour of last year's Prime Day. The company says there's plenty of time left as they've extended Prime Day to 36 hours in total.
All right, so you have until midnight tonight, Arizona time, to get your deals on Arizona Prime Day, a fictitious holiday made up by Amazon. And depending on how well it goes, will be depending on whether or not Jeff Bezos remains at the top of the Forbes list.
Well, I don't think there's any chance he's not going to be at the top. The question is, just how far is he at the top?
Well, you say that, but you got to take a look at what his fortune has done this year. I mean, just the beginning of this year, the beginning of 2018, he has made $45 billion.
Right, but my point is, number two on the list is Bill Gates, who's almost $100 billion behind him. Jeff Bezos.
No, it's about $56 billion less.
He's worth, yeah, okay, 56.
Yeah.
Jeff Bezos can have a really bad day on the stock market, and Gates is going to have a bad one as well. Like, Gates ain't catching him. He's so far out front. We have somebody now that you'd have to go back to 100 years ago in our nation's history. I don't know, you know, the Rockefellers or these types of things. Of someone with such concentrated wealth and such a huge amount of it that I don't think most people can even fathom $150 billion in wealth.
Yeah,
that's
like a
country, isn't it? It's like, what's your gross domestic product of Malaysia? About $150 billion.
Okay, so are you insinuating then that you can have too much money?
I look at a number like Jeff Bezos is worth, his net worth is $151 billion, and I'm like, is that too rich? I'm a capitalist.
Is there such thing?
Is there such a thing? Fine. And I'm not looking to stop them. I'm just saying there are probably some unique challenges and unique questions we could ask about a person that has $151 billion and the type of power, influence that comes along with that. Do you see where I'm going with this? Now, I don't believe that Jeff Bezos, I don't have any evidence that he's using his wealth and power like some sort of James Bond evil genius, that he's not sitting on a throne petting a white kitten right now, plotting world domination. But he could. I mean, at $151 billion, there is a lot you could do. There's a lot of Bond villains that wish they had that kind of money.
And there's very few people that are going to tell you no. At that
almost
point.
None of them.
Right, exactly.
You are surrounded by people who have a vested interest in making sure you hear the word yes on a regular basis.
So, okay, you've got Jeff Bezos. Is it Bezos or Bezos?
I've heard it both ways. You've heard Bezos.
I say Bezos.
Let's call the whole thing off. Tomato, tomato.
Okay. I know every time like you say it, then I say it. I'm like, which is it? I don't know. Anywho. Yeah, net worth briefly surpassed $151 billion yesterday, closed out at $150 billion. Imagine, Bruce.
Yeah, I'm ready.
If Amazon Prime didn't have any glitches yesterday, what he would have closed the day out as. Because he has he's got like 15-16% of the company, I want to say, at this point in time. I believe that's what it is. I saw that in here. So Amazon founder owns 16% of the company share. So he's not going to be missing any meals anytime soon. Wow.
Like his great 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 grandchildren aren't going to miss any meals.
You say that, yeah, because it's such an amount of money. But you take a look at number two on the list, Bill Gates. And Bill Gates has said that he's not leaving his money to his kids.
Bill Gates, well, okay, they're not going to miss any meals, but he is giving away the majority of his worth to charity causes.
So we'll see what happens with
Jeff Bezos'
family.
I don't know
exactly,
what Jeff. I think Jeff Bezos is building a spaceship
for
world
such
domination.
Thing as too much money? Can't you have too much money? Give us a call on the open mic line 602-200-2733.
Yeah. Wow. Look at that. Again, every day.
I say no.
Amazon Prime Day. If you put your mind to it, every day is Amazon Prime Day. I get my salt?
Look at
what do I need? A Himalayan salt? What is it again?
A Himalayan salt lamp.
Looks cool.
Yeah.
I saw them in Sedona while I was up there.
Of course
there
saw them in Sedona. That doesn't surprise me. It's exactly where
you want one from Amazon, not from Sedona. What does that say about me?
Oh, geez.
Yeah. I want one from the Himalayas. A judge has halted deportations of immigrant families that were reunited. Okay. So now what? What's the plan moving forward when it comes to these people in this country? What can we do? What can't we do? We'll talk about that. Give you the latest on the judge's orders coming up next on Arizona's News Station.
KTAR News on 92.3 FM. Get some perspective. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
Well, the battle continues between the Trump administration and the judiciary as you have another judge, this one in San Diego, who weighed in regarding the deportations of specifically now families that had been reunited.
The same San Diego judge who ordered that children and their parents be reunited is now ordering a temporary halt to any family deportations for 1 week until the government can respond to an ACLU concern about family deportations after children and parents have been reunited. The ACLU argues more time is needed to ensure that no family is being improperly deported. Government lawyers have 1 week now to respond, then the judge will rule permanently after reviewing the arguments.
Yeah, so we've got a status conference set for this Friday as well on this. But you have the American Civil Liberties Union that brought forth the lawsuit because they were concerned about rumors of mass deportation. What they were hearing was that these families were getting reunified, okay, which we know is a process.
Got it.
And that then they were just being deported once they were being reunified, giving families mere hours to decide whether or not they want to make the very difficult decision about leaving their child behind in the United States or going back to the country.
Well, it strikes me that the Trump administration gave this judge all the ammunition she needed to order this. Whether these things are happening improperly or not, this entire episode, last 2 months since the policy was changed and then there were separations and then trying to reunite, that the haphazardness, the lack of forethought, the fact that it's been messy all along kind of gives the judge the argument that you guys haven't shown you knew what you were doing before. I don't specifically trust you know what you're doing now.
Yeah, I'm not so against what this judge did. I mean, when you read the headline, to me, it's a little false. The headline reads, Judge Halts Family Deportations for Now. It appears as though, and correct me if I'm wrong, Bruce, but as I read this, the judge is saying you've got 7 days.
Mm-hmm.
So after you unify the families.
Okay. You find their kids, you match them up with parents, which we know that was an issue to begin
Absolutely.
With.
Absolutely. Right. Yeah. And we also have some clarification as to how they're going about doing that for the 5 to 17 year olds. Apparently, all the children under the age of 5 have been reunited. Okay.
That can be.
Yes.
There were some extenuating circumstances
with
that
others.
Most of us would understand.
So what my understanding is, okay, so you get mom and dad and kid together again.
Got it.
And now the government has to wait at least a week before they can deport them.
Because they can't deport them immediately.
Exactly. Now, I think a week's a little long. Okay. But I'm not going to split hairs.
Fine.
Okay, a week.
Three days to 7 days.
Whatever. Like, that's fine.
Right.
I'm not opposed to giving them a couple days instead of, okay, you're together. Now back to Honduras you go. I'm not opposed to a couple of the days. So the idea that we've stopped family deportations for now, it's a week until the next status conference.
But I mean, and I just want to get back to this point where, you know, if you think about any court case and you have, what, the ACLU and other groups on one side and you have the Trump administration on the other. The Trump administration hasn't exactly shown enthusiasm for following the judge's orders in the past, hasn't shown competency for following the judge's orders in the past. And so if you were the defendant continually going in front of a judge and you'd been ignoring him, dodging him, not prepared, the judge would look at you and go, yeah, I think I'm going to rule against you again because you pretty much haven't shown me you take this nearly as seriously as I think you should. So they've created some of their own problem with this by not being forthcoming and by not being as enthusiastic about following the judge's previous order.
Yeah.
Is that a nice way to
put
it?
Yeah, yeah.
But you can, I mean, the judge is a judge. They're going to look at those same lawyers have to walk back in the courtroom and go, hey, I remember you from last week when you basically didn't do what I told you to do. As much as we want to believe, the judge is probably going to look at him and go, yeah, I can't imagine. Yeah, I'm going to all of a sudden start taking your word for things.
Still, a lot of moving parts in this zero tolerance, separating families, not separating families, now reunifying these families. Where do you hold them? Who can get asylum? Who's getting deported? How do you still reunify a bunch of the kids that are out there and make sure that you're giving them back to their parents and parents that won't abuse them or that they're not some
their
sort of
actual
human
parents.
Trafficker.
Yeah. Make sure you're matching up with their actual biological family.
I can appreciate the complexity of this and the confusion and as well the chaos that has ensued since this policy was put into place. But at the end of the day, my heart still goes to these kids that a lot of them don't understand what the heck is going on. Mm-hmm. They don't know where their parents are, what's going on. Am I staying in this country? Am I going? Am I going to see mom and dad again? Who are these people taking care of me?
Are you old enough to even understand some of this?
No, a lot of these kids can't. So while we talk a lot about the chaos, when we talk a lot about the confusion, when we talk a lot about the complexity of this issue, which are all very valid points and discussions to be had. For me, it just comes back to the kids. And in all reality, they're innocent in this. And you can't punish kids for the actions of adults. And where we're at right now in this situation is still a confusing one. With these status hearings that are going to be taking place both this Friday and next week with this judge, further clarifying what is going to happen to not just these kids and the families that have been reunited, but the whole process to begin moving forward. How do we clean this up? What do we do? And what are the best practices moving forward?
Yeah. Well, again, there is maybe a comfort that comes from it, but also a certain level of sadness that it requires judges, for all intents and purposes, threatening the federal government that you have to do things by the way the law is written, not the way you wish the law was written. You have to follow the Constitution, not the one you wish you had, mm-hmm. you know. And even if these rules don't fit in with your political agenda, you still have to do them. That there's a sadness that it requires basically a judge's order for you to be a decent human being.
Yeah, you know what? There are a lot of villains in this story. There are a lot of villains in this story. But I also don't want to gloss over a lot of the heroes. And from what I've been able to put together, there are a lot of caseworkers in several different states that are putting in massive hours of overtime trying to reunify these families that are taking great care of these kids.
People working at Southwest trying their best. All these children are suddenly forced on them, doing the best they can.
Yeah, again, complex situation, lot of villains, but there's also some heroes in it as well.
Fair enough. So do you go and are you a concert goer? Are you going back and seeing, dare I say, some of the bands of your youth? Are you a big fan of yacht rock? You want to go and...
No, I'm more like Nine Inch Nails.
You know, you want to hear that again? You want to hear Christopher Cross? Do artists, do they have to play their biggest hits? Even if their biggest hit was 10, 20, 30 years ago, are you going to watch a greatest hits tour or are you going to watch an artist? There's a debate. it gets some people fired up.
We're going to talk about that because I think we might be on different sides of this one.
It's coming up next on Arizona's News Station.
Working on a night.
Arizona's News Station. KTAR News on 92.3 FM. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
Little Bob Seger for you?
I love me some Bob Seger. Okay. I am so excited because...
First concert I ever went to in my life.
Is it? Okay, see, I want to go see him in concert. They had to reschedule his concert from last year. It's going to be February 15th next year. And if I go see Seger...
Okay. I went as a little... My mom took me because she couldn't find a babysitter, so I went
That's a great reason to take their kid.
Bob Seger's a little kid.
I think it's a pretty safe concert to take a kid to.
Yeah.
If I go see Seger...
You go see Bob Seger.
And he doesn't play Night Moves...
Okay, what's going to happen?
I'm going to be ticked.
Do you know... obviously, you don't care... That song was released in 1976.
I don't care. It's classic rock. It's the stuff that, like, you know, I my dad raised me listening to. I love me some Seger. I go see the concert. I want to see. I want to hear Night Moves.
Should artists be required, forced? Should they be forced to disclose what songs they're going to play before a concert? An artist like Bob Seger, I don't know how many albums he's had. It's been a lot. He probably has hundreds of songs, I'm going to assume. And to him, these songs are important. If you go to a concert, how do you guarantee that he's going to play the song that you want to hear? You can acknowledge that in a room full of 10,000 people at a Bob Seger, there's a bunch of people that have a favorite Bob Seger song, and he can't get to all of them.
No, I get it. I get it. But I also think that artists...
Like day three of the Bob Seger concert. I'm into my eighth album now. We've got a few more songs to go.
But like, so there are the hits.
Okay.
And when I... Woo! I like that one. I just fired off. Which is a great song. If you go to see Journey...
I'm not arguing it's not a good song.
You go see Journey, and granted, I know that like Journey of today is different than Journey of yesteryear.
It's like a cover band.
If you go and you don't hear Don't Stop Believin', you're going to be a little ticked off.
Here's the thing, and this is, I don't like live concerts. I don't go to many of them anymore. It's just, for me, the experience is different, and I've been to a couple thousand of them. I don't need to see anybody ever again. Get off my lawn. I've dealt with artists and understand where the artists come from this. And it basically comes down to people more and more going to big concerts and these bands not playing their hits anymore. They're playing their new music, which is why most bands go out and tour. It used to be to, quote, promote an album.
Well, Kevin wrote into a journalist and he was complaining because he says, you know what? I'm a casual Nine Inch Nails fan.
Okay, now he likes Nine Inch Nails.
After paying several hundred dollars for tickets for him and his wife, Nine Inch Nails didn't play the big hits like this one, Head Like a Hole.
Didn't play Head Like a Hole.
So he goes, what kind of
recourse play closer.
Audience member have if a performer
None.
Does not play his hits?
None.
He goes, as a casual fan wants to hear the hits, the casual fan pays the same price for his concert seat as the diehard fan. I think that like...
Download the song.
Okay, this is one reason why I don't go to many concerts, because I have been disappointed. Grant, I know you got a new album. You're going to play the new album. And if I'm coming to your concert, then I should probably download the album to be a little bit familiar with it. But in the grand scheme of things, I like you. I like your band because of your hits. That's what introduced me to your band. So when I get there, I want to hear them.
I think it's difficult for artists. And again, I've had the opportunity, I've talked to some of these artists, and some get it and some don't. Now, when I say get it, some of them do this reluctantly. I've never met an artist from Snoop Dogg to Incubus.
Wow, that's a range.
I don't know if it's that big a range, but I worked
Snoop Dogg to Incubus?
I worked in pop. Hip-hop, and I worked in alternative.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Okay?
Yeah.
So kind of, you know, my big bands, if you will, in those sense. I never knew one of them that liked doing, quote-unquote, their biggest song at every single show. You've heard that song, and just like you hear it on the radio, the sing-alongs, you tap your fingers, everybody knows it. That artist has had to perform that song 100 more times than you've heard it, and they're sick of it.
Well, you got Nirvana frontman Kurt Cobain famously
hated playing this song. Never wanted to do it. Live.
Exactly. But this is why everybody knows Nirvana.
He didn't care.
Because of this song.
Like, yeah.
All right, so we're going to ask you on the open mic line, 602-200-2733. Does a band, does an artist have some sort of obligation to play some of the hits? because that's frankly why you're going, in my opinion. Or, you know, when you go to a concert, you just get what you get and you don't throw a fit. You could tell I'm a mom of an 8-year-old. 602-200-2733, open mic line. Is there a responsibility to play their hits? 602-200-2733, I say yes.
If you just want to hear a greatest hits compilation, download the songs. Watch the videos on YouTube.
I'll spend the $1.50 to download the song. I don't need to spend $150 on the concert then. You're losing money, not me.
And the artists at this point, the older ones especially, yeah, okay. They're fine with it. You just got to know what you're getting into. Madonna doesn't do Borderline live. I'm just going to break it to you.
I feel like I'm losing my mind.
Should we expand the light rail? Is light rail a good idea? In some communities, a little upset about light rail expansion. We'll talk about it next.